I want to know everything there is to know about you.
Now I'm going to introduce me.
You must have spotted her by now. She's always there.
Don't I deserve love?
Somebody has to like me best.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Don't Know Her podcast. I am Scott.
And I'm Michael.
And we are here once again to talk about a star of the big screen, because that's where we like to focus most. We just adore the films. And ones in particular that we feel, for whatever reason, haven't been kind of championed enough or spoken about enough or have maybe not got the opportunities we wish they had. Interesting presences on screen that have created some kind of impact on us, and we want to spend a little bit of time sharing in that and going back through their filmographies and finding some interesting touch points to discuss. But with that, Mr. Michael, who have we landed upon this year time?
We have landed upon Kelly Reilly, who it felt right because watching the most recent Kenneth Branagh adaptation of an Agatha Christie, A Haunting in Venice, watching her in it alongside, you know, people like Michelle Yeoh and Tina Fey and Jamie Dornan, it's like, wow, really she could have been a big star, and I guess still could be, but like, how interesting, because she's someone that is in my memory of film, but she just isn't always there, and I guess I feel like the films I remember were never as successful as maybe they could have been.
Yeah.
But I always enjoy watching her. So yeah. So that's why I tried to push Kelly Reilly on.
He's such a pusher! My God, he doesn't stop. Interesting. What was the first film that you think you remember seeing her from, or the first one that captured you?
I think it would have been Pride and Prejudice. I'm trying to remember because Pride and Prejudice and Mrs. Henderson Presents came out at the same time, same year. I don't know what came first, but I remember her in both of those films. And in Mrs. Henderson Presents, she's playing a very, you know, charming English lady who is nervous about love. And in Pride and Prejudice, she's playing Mr. Bingley's bitchy sister, and I think that was like, yeah, you know, this is what I'm into this.
Okay, great.
And what about you? Where would you have first seen her?
I think it's Calvary. I may have seen her in things before I saw Calvary. I'm not terribly sure of that though, but I do remember watching that film and thinking, gosh, this woman's really interesting. She's got great screen presence. I think that is very, very true. It is certainly of many of the roles that we'll talk about. And whereas often when you watch films maybe focused on so much on someone else, in the case of that film, Brendan Gleeson, sometimes the supporting players may kind of fall away in your recollections of the film, but I do remember her kind of imprinting on me, and if anyone was to say her name, that's where my mind would go to first. So I'm pretty sure that's what it was for me.
And you're dead right, she has this really strong presence, like just even her walking on screen, and I quite versatile, I would say. Like, she can be, you know, a very strong woman, a bitchy woman, aloof, like mysterious, and it is an interesting range that we will talk about with these movies, this career. And I think that's what surprised me, like, why don't we see, because she's very distinctive looking, like it's not as if she's hidden behind characters or anything like that, but for whatever reason it didn't click with audiences in the way of her contemporaries, you know. This and because she has had leading roles, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yet never, and successful movies, Oscar nominated movies, big directors.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is an interesting thing. And also, one thing about her she just, to me, is very, very English. And I think that's used to great effect in many films, too.
Yeah, no, for sure. She's a good one. She feels perfect for this. I was particularly excited to go back and either revisit or watch some of these for the first time, because there were a couple on there that I thought, oh, this is, yeah, great opportunity to see her in fine form and revisit these things that I've been meaning to for whatever reason, because they stick in my head or I find them particularly interesting. There's a couple in particular for that reason. So yeah, this was a good one. I enjoyed doing the film watching.
Yeah, and we have a very wild movie to end on with the Kenneth Branagh one. But before we get there, let's go from the very, very, very beginning.
Oh.
So Jessica Kelly Siobhan Riley was born in 1977 in Chessington. Yeah. Okay, got it. Her mother was a hospital receptionist and her dad a police officer. She studied drama in her GCSEs and clearly was very good at it. Like, it seems like this was like full hog, like this is what she's going to do. And it's very close that she then gets her first screen role, appearing in the Biz series. Not something I know. Do you know the Biz?
No, the name is, but I couldn't place specifically what it would have been about.
And then she goes to stage. So, for instance, she works a lot with Terry Johnson. And so there's like Elton John's Glasses in 1997, The London Cuckolds in 98, and The Graduate in 2000. Being celebrated, like, so working, doing pretty well. In 2000, she makes her film debut in Maybe Baby, in a small part. Have you ever seen it, the Ben Elton movie?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
I probably have seen it years ago, but I, you know, it's a very small part Kelly was in. And then that's followed by playing a young Helen Mirren in Last Orders.
Well, there we go, full circle. She got there in the end, her dream to work with Dame Helen happened.
Of course.
A film I have seen, actually, Last Orders. I can't remember it too much, but it was, I believe it was one that once upon a time the DVD came free with a newspaper on a Sunday. And I remember mostly Michael Caine and lots of old men. That was sort of the gist.
Yeah, I think that is the gist of of that story. But it's not film where she is making her market stage at this point. So in 2001, she's in a rerun of Sarah Kane's Blasted, a very celebrated play. This is where she's called theatrical Viagra, which is meant as a compliment, even if it's very sexist, even in tone. But she then also goes on to do After Miss Julie, becoming the youngest woman at the time to be nominated for Best Actress in a leading role in a play. She was 26, which is wild when you think of like Oscar stats and stuff. But anyway,
and that was
really celebrated.
Olivier's,
the Olivier Awards, yeah, Laurence Olivier Awards,
the
yeah.
Youngest.
So the theatrical
26
awards
being the youngest at that point in time. How interesting.
So people love her, and people talk, like, you know, working in theater and stuff. You know, I remember people talking about her Desdemona, for instance, in the Dunmar Warehouse. And this After Miss Julie. So yeah, she has made her mark. And it's a shame she doesn't do more theatre, really, to be honest. But anyway, in 2002, she gets her first franchise, in a way, when she stars alongside Audrey Tautou and Romain Duris in the film The Spanish Apartment, also called Potluck in the UK. She plays an English Erasmus student that goes to France. It's a comedy. And then she's also in the sequel, Russian Dolls, in 2005. And then the third film called Chinese Puzzle in 2013. So good for her having a franchise that most people in the UK and America and Ireland have probably not heard of.
Mm.
In 2005 is a big year for her, though. And I remember this was big. Like, people were, you know, bigging her up as this exciting new person. Because she gets Pride and Prejudice, the Joe Wright version starring Keira Knightley, and Mrs. Henderson Presents. As I was mentioning before, very different sorts of roles. I think Mrs. Henderson Presents is the one maybe to focus on because it's the one where she is so vital to the story. Like, she is the third lead, really. Unless you would consider Will Young singing songs all the time, which he does take a lot of time of as the third lead. But yeah, really, you know, the story focuses on Judi Dench's character, Mrs. Henderson, having this burlesque show in wartime London and Bob Hoskins working with her on it. But it is Kelly Riley that is the heart of that story, really, as one of the showgirls. You'd never seen it before, is that correct?
No, I hadn't. And I remember when it came out, Judi Dench, I don't know why I hadn't seen it sooner. Feels like a strange one to have been missing from my past viewings. I was surprised to even just start by going back to the poster before watching it and seeing that, yeah, she is like third build. She is a title name on the poster alongside Judy and Bob Hoskins. So I was like, okay, great. This is going to be a big part for her. And she certainly is the heart of it. The film itself, you know what? I quite enjoyed watching it. I was expecting not to for some reasons, but you know, it's a pleasant enough watch. It's very run of the mill in terms of kind of the beats it's hitting as a sort of British, fairly gentle, even though there's lots of nudity given the nature of what's going on, type comedy drama. But Judy's having fun in it. Not sure it was the Oscar nomination terrain, which it was.
Wild.
I'm uncertain about that, but you know, folk just love Ms. Dench and like to nominate her wherever they can. I think Kelly is really good in it. It's interesting. I don't think she gets a huge amount to do, given it is kind of the sort of third lead, and I feel like it is a bit of a sort of ornamental part on paper, perhaps, but she does bring something to it and does bring this warmth, and it gives the film far more than if she was not in it. So, yes, I'm glad to have ticked it off the list, but wouldn't necessarily be quick to recommend it. But what are you've seen this probably countless times. You're a massive fan of this film, I believe.
I've seen it probably twice. I didn't really like it when it came out, but I really like Kelly in it, and you know, of course, Bob Hoskins and Judi Dench are fun. And this time watching it, kind of the same feeling. I just find there's like a moment between Kelly and Judy where, like, Judy's kind of ignored. Well, she must have in terms of the writing anyway, and like how they're doing the characters. But she's like, oh, all you girls go out and you have fun and you do all this. And she realises, like, Kelly actually is a bit lonely.
Well, I never go out.
My dear, why ever not?
Before I started stripping off for a living, I was always falling in love. Never again. So I've become a right little priss. A naked spinster. And that's the way I like it. Who would have dreamed that standing on a stage without any clothes on would be the safest place to be?
And I think how they deal with that storyline and push it forward, like Judi Dench matches her with a soldier, and Kelly has turmoil, let's say, in a certain way. It you know, it's doing very obvious beats, but for me, that is still effective in a wartime story when actually those things could happen, you know? So one day you could be like, oh, I'm worried about, you know, painting my wall, and the next minute, you know, you've been bombed. So I I think that's the bit of the movie where I'm like, okay, I really wish we leaned more into this sort of thing as opposed to women being naked. What the hell are we doing? You know? Mm. And I will say, though, Kelly's very good at that, because like the scene where she's there, like, you know, I don't think we should be stripping if the men aren't stripping. And she's like the ringleader of like, take it off, take it off. And that's done in a, and again, I thought that would have been really aged and, you know, whatever, but it's quite aware, like the women are the most powerful part of this building, and, you know, sugarcoating what I'm sure was a very complicated world. But yeah, so I don't really have a strong opinion on it. I think the marketing of it was very strong for the gay pound, which I hate saying, but, you know, like a gay pound and then gay pound, like young boys, teenage gay boys who want to watch Judi Dench in a film, you know, because yeah. They had the blue feathers and the like glitter, and you're like, oh, a burlesque show during World War II. Like, what a setup for a story.
Yeah, Sandy Powell costumes, no less.
Yeah, yeah. And it is a cool, like, and that, it's really fascinating. Like, I think that history is fascinating, and that building is fascinating. So there's, you know, it's really ripe for being redone, or not even redone, just someone else coming in and looking at that history. But yeah, Mrs. Henderson Presents is not the movie. And yeah, one of the Judy's been nominated a lot for Oscars, but that surely is the weakest of her nominations, for sure. And I should say, Mrs. Henderson Presents did get her an award at the Emperor Film Awards for Best Newcomer.
Emperor or Empire?
Empire?
As in the magazine.
As in the magazine.
Okay.
Aww.
Yes.
Which is
cool.
As good as an Oscar, they say.
They say it's just the same. It is, I mean, with the, just going back to like that, having her name on the poster, it's then fascinating. It's an interesting choice, because at that point, unless it was to do with a kind of her theatrical success and the film playing into that sort of world, I was kind of like looking at it being like, oh, was this intended to be a big launch moment? Did they expect it to be maybe more than it ultimately
was? I think
was?
They did. Honestly, like, Harvey Weinstein probably had her for Best Supporting Act, like, gunning for it. The
right.
film isn't good enough. And if the film had been good, I think she would have been an easy nomination. Do you know, that would have made a lot of sense.
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, so, and because she'd be celebrating theatre, like, there's so many reasons why, like, that trajectory would make sense. But, yeah, didn't work out for her.
Hmm.
But the next film she does do is Nicholas Roeg's last film, which I didn't know until researching this, called Puffball.
Oh.
Which is the story of a gay man in a ball. No, chicken. No.
Like,
no,
it's on the news.
It doesn't. It's nothing to do with gays. So it's not. It's not that sort of puff.
Boring.
But she does a year later get her first lead role in the horror thriller film Eden Lake, for which she gets a British Independent Award nomination for Best Actress. So before people knew who Michael Fassbender is or was,
is.
He is was. Kelly and Michael go on a little road trip. They're middle class people with notions of, you know, like a little bit. Don't you find, like, there's
yeah.
I think that's important to the story.
Yes, it is.
They're going on a camping trip, but there's not much walking really involved. Like, they park in a wood and then go beside some water and then put up a tent.
Yeah, that's how most of us camp. We don't all need to hike, Michael. Jeez.
Yeah, sorry. I'm not shaming anyone. It's not glam. Like, this film could be totally different. You know, like, I think those details are important. That she's wearing like a summer dress. I mean, here again, I'm shaming people that are hiking again.
No,
I'm sorry.
It is important. You're right, because it's how it unfolds from there.
But then basically, these rough lower class people are ruining their fun. And what starts off is Michael Fassbender thinking he's defending his lady and, like, whatever, going over to tell them to be quiet, escalates in a way. Yeah, your worst nightmare, basically. It makes me want to leave the UK.
Yeah, it's a grim one.
So yeah, you're a huge fan. You love seeing women suffer.
Yeah,
so what do you make of it?
Loved it when I first saw it, loved it now. That's not true, but it's also not untrue. I do think Eden Lake is a strong British horror film, or at least solid. When I first watched it, it certainly imprinted on me, because it's this idea of, you know, it could be true. Who did youths terrorising folk? But I guess there is something interesting in that sort of social balance that comes from these characters versus the young characters. And that certainly is fuel, I think, for how things turn out. But it's I think, scary because it feels very real. And that is the level it works most successfully on. It's very memorable, but also because it's pretty grim and bleak. And the journey that Kelly and Michael go on facing up to these characters is pretty terrifying. So I think it's a really effective British horror film. I think there's scenes, especially the ending, will really stick with you, I think, when you watch it. And I think it's quite pointed and it has perhaps things to say.
Sure. I mean, that's the strength of this film. So to be honest, this whole journey and the goriness, and because it's very gory at times, it's the ending. Like, I actually think this would be an amazing short film, and it wouldn't surprise me if it did exist as a short film before, but it's the ending that makes the whole thing work, because it is. It's a very strong... Because even the word horror, I know it is a horror genre, but it feels much more like a, you know, state of the nation sort of thing. Like, if this was on stage, like, there's certain plays, like, I can't think of the play by Sarah Kane, but violence by certain classes and, like, reflecting on, like, it does feel that grand at the end. Like, what happens in those final 4 minutes, or probably maybe even less, is pretty damning of a country. Do you know, like, I think it is very much just reflecting. And I think it's got worse. In 2008, I think I might have watched this film and thought, God, that's very, you know, elaborate. Whereas I'm like, no, this 100% happens. Maybe that happens. That's my naivety kind of decreasing with age. But I'm like, this would happen. Like, I've no doubt this sort of thing would happen.
Wow.
Sorry, does that make it sound also like I'm very, I don't know. But I do. I honestly think that sort of thing does happen. But I think that's an interesting conversation. I mean, we live in a country, like in a world, it's not just this country, where people will behave in a way that defend themselves and feel entitled to having this area, which is theirs. And if someone's trying to, whether or not they have to or not, in the case of Kelly Riley, have to, like, try to bend those structures, then I don't think they will come off very well. Do you know?
Yeah.
I'm talking about it in a coded way, because we're trying not to spoil the ending, but let's say she suffers at the hands of people in a community that feel very much like she threatened them.
Yeah.
And the way she's behaving, I guess it is an interesting thing about class. I'll never watch this film again, but I certainly will think about the dynamic between her and those characters based on class.
Yes.
It's an interesting thing.
It is. It is. And I think it for all of those reasons, I think it's quite tight, I would say. And that also does work in its favour. I think I agree with you that as a short film, it could be something really special. But it is still fairly tight. I mean, it's short. It gets to the point. It's quite neat and clear in its kind of ideas and positioning. So I think the strengths are less necessarily about the horror thriller elements, although important, and kind of more about a reflection of reality. I hear you. So yes, I would recommend it, but you have to be the sort of person who's up for, you know, pretty bleak, pretty gory, realist type horror.
At this time, so she was appearing in lots of things. So this is a lead role for her in Eden Lake. She's also in Me and Orson Welles, a film called The Triage. She's on this high-profile role in primetime British TV show, Above Suspicion, and also joins another franchise, Sherlock Holmes, where she plays Mary Morstan, but marries Watson, so becomes Mary Watson. And she's in the first two films, so Sherlock Holmes and then Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows. And it's a limited role, but she will be seen by lots of people.
Yes, probably, I guess, her most seen, or certainly, films, even if she is barely there. I mean, in the first one, I think she's there just once. She's in the second one a little bit more, and I was then hoping to get more Kelly in the second one. And I think I based that on arcs I'd seen in the Sherlock TV series with, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch. Because the character she's playing has a very interesting arc in that show. So I was like, oh, this is what's going to happen here. But no, it still just feels kind of like damsel in distress type stuff. Not very interesting. She doesn't get a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I do think... So she is a... She's not really in... Well, I wouldn't say distress, but I would say she's a damsel that's frustrated by Sherlock Holmes's presence. Which is a... It's still a trope and all, but I think she's quite good in the very small part she has.
My God.
They'll be back.
Oh, John, shut the door.
They'll only shoot through it, my love.
He's right.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I understand.
Do you?
Terribly inconvenient.
Well, I'd be distressed if Robert Downey Jr. turned up in drag... bad drag and was telling me what to do. But yes, yeah, she's in those movies and I'd never seen them before either. So Kelly is introducing us to the creme de la creme of movie making that we've ignored. Aidan Blake is the range of films when you do things like this is like, whoa, I can't go from like Sherlock Holmes to Aidan Blake is a jump. as is going to Flight, which we're going to talk about next, because she, so in 2012, firstly, she appears alongside Sam Rockwell in a single shot, but she, in the same year, she has essentially the co-leading role in Robert Zemeckis' Flight, opposite Denzel Washington. I could not believe, because I thought I'd seen Flight, it turns out I saw the crashing scene of him, of Denzel Washington as this pilot who safely crashes a plane, or crashes a plane in the most safe way. But I realised I was confusing that film and Sully, and I put them together. And what I didn't know what we were going to get was Kelly Reilly as this alcoholic American woman trying to get back on her feet, colliding with Denzel Washington recovering from his alcoholism, which he's ignoring.
Let's go.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, let's go tomorrow.
Oh, you're serious.
I'm dead serious. We go in the morning, you know? We just get out of here. Start over.
We can.
Yes, no. We can. It'll be beautiful. It's like bright sand beaches.
I'm worried about
it's paradise. Don't worry about me. I'm fine, thank you.
You're not. Yes, you're really not. Yes, you need help.
And then I also did not expect a very religious overtone to the whole thing too. It's interesting. I actually think Kelly is really great. Like really, yes, really, really, like why people didn't shout more about that. Because that was an Oscar film. So, mm-hmm. Well, for Denzel mostly, but yeah, I like it. Like, what is your thoughts on Flight?
Well, now that I'm realising the chronology, Flight must have been the first time I saw Kelly because it came before Calvary and I saw both of them in the cinema. But I guess for whatever reason, my mind goes to that other one before it goes to this one. She is great in it. I would have liked more from her because it sometimes feels a bit of a kind of disservice to bring this character into the story and have her sort of serving the kind of male gazy focus of the film rather than giving her a more interesting arc, which I think they certainly could have. Flight's a fascinating film. I think the crash sequence and all of that, I think, is pretty incredible cinema. I think that is amazingly done. Denzel Washington is exceptional in that sequence, but is also really great throughout this film. But I mean, it's Denzel, so we should think so. from there, it's certainly really interesting. It's a really interesting film because it then goes on the down the road of this man who's inebriated whilst flying, but ultimately, although many people die, he prevents it from being a much worse disaster than it was, and these kind of conflicting things of the situation itself and the inevitability of it versus him not being in the correct state to be flying a plane, and we then see him dealing with that in the court cases, etc. thereafter. So I really think it's an interesting film. I like this sort of approach to it. But yes, ultimately it does come down to this sort of religious fable type storytelling, which is where it's a bit kind of like, oh, that's where we're going with this. Okay, interesting, interesting road to go down. But ultimately, I do like this film, and I think it stands out for many reasons.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. Like, I do recommend it. I think it was, I was way more entertained than I thought I was going to. I think I thought it was going to be dull, but I wasn't, like, you know, it's wonderful watching Denzel Washington anyway, but, you know, him after the flight trying to convince people, like, you know, I wouldn't be drunk, or, like, you know, I might have had one drink the night before, and they're like, what are you talking about? So, yeah, it was good. So, and I really enjoyed watching her. Like, I'd call that a lead role for her, really, because, you know, as we're watching Denzel get onto the plane, she's also going through her day. And now it is a shame that, like, they romantically link, and, like, there could have been more interesting things she could do, for sure.
Yeah.
But she is so prominent in a film which is just sold on Denzel, really. And rightly so. You know, he's the person you're going to watch. But yeah, so it is good. And yeah, so that would be then the first thing if you saw that in the cinema. Because, so, she, her next lot of films are 2014. So she's starring with Greg Kinnear in the film Heaven is for Real. And in Calvary, which is the John Michael McDonough film. So we've previously talked about The Guard, which was his first film, which he wrote and directed when we did Fionnuala Flanagan. And now, essentially, that was about a guard, and now this one's about a priest. And Calvary, again, she's playing quite a big part. So she's playing Brendan Gleeson's daughter, who is coming to visit him in the west of Ireland at a time where he is basically been threatened with, like, you know, with murder. Like, he's going to be killed because in the opening scene in the confession box, he's told by someone he can't identify, a male voice is the only thing he really has to go with, who tells him that he was sexually assaulted as a boy by a priest, and he's going to kill Brendan Gleeson to make a point about that. So the film is to solve who's going to do this and how are we going to stop it. But it's also about reflecting on life. And I think Kelly's, like, as the B plot, like, reflecting on, you know, attempting suicide and not feeling well.
I should buy a cane.
It'll suit you. You're old beyond your years.
Yeah. Give me a feeling of imperiousness.
And you could lean on it.
I could lean on it. Reflectively.
Point things out.
Club someone to death with it.
A blunt instrument, yeah. Who, though?
A certain young man from Rathmines.
And having this sort of respite, in a way, in this place in Ireland is really lovely. And I would say lovely is not a word I would put with any of the McDonough's story, full stop.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
Because I should add, Martin McDonough is John Michael's brother. And yeah, I think it's quite, it's an interesting film. I mean, I watched that in Ireland in the cinema, and one of the first lines of dialogue is, you know, is it 7 or 8? I can't remember, but when I first tasted semen, and it's like, fucking hell, like, that's heavy. That's a heavy, heavy, mm-hmm. heavy thing to hear. And in a country that has had, at that time in particular, and still hasn't really, like, fully, reflected on what the church got away with and how implicated everybody perhaps was, or probably, you know, that is such a big thing. So Calvary is biting off a lot and has a lot of, you know, very celebrated, you know, Irish actors, both, you know, like Chris O'Dowd, for instance, is celebrated in lots of places. But then you'll have like Cillian Scott, who is someone who's very famous or pretty famous in Ireland. And then you have Kelly Riley, which I don't think Irish people would know her really, but you know, you have a mixture of people. But yeah, I really find it interesting. It's an interesting film. And I it's one of those films which I would say isn't perfect and isn't like it knows what it wants to like open the doors of, but it's not ready to full, and it's probably not wanting to fully try to realize what it's doing. And I think that's, in this case, that's okay. But it also doesn't surprise me when I hear people say they don't like it. I'm like, well, yeah, fair. It's a tricky movie and it's unpleasant and it's a bit messy. But as long as they all agree Brendan Gleeson's great in it, then I don't mind.
Yes. It's, I think it's a really great film. I remember thinking that when I saw it in the cinema. I just think, again, it's really tight. It's, I think, really well put together. It's thoughtful. I like the, even though it's coming from that very dark place, I kind of like this setup and then where it's ultimately leading to, and therefore everything that happens in between is down to what we're leading to believe is perhaps an inevitability. It's been suggested it will happen, and then wondering if it's going to walk to that point, if that is indeed going to happen. Brendan Gleeson's terrific in it. I think Kelly is brilliant. I think for me, this is maybe my favourite performance of hers. And again, maybe that's the reason it's the one that I think of first when I think of her. That would make sense. But there's just so much that is, I think, good about it and interesting about it. It's a really solid, thoughtful watch. And I would really recommend it to people who haven't seen it. But I guess with sort of trigger warnings of the how it is set up and ultimately where it lands up, I think it's worth being aware that that's what it's doing to tell the story. But yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, there are trigger warnings for like so many things in that film.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's really good in it. And again, you would hope that more would have come from it. I should add, in the same year, 2014, she also stars in a short-lived ABC series, Black Box. But that doesn't go anywhere. 2015, she joins the highly, highly, highly celebrated True Detective, but sadly in its second season, which was less celebrated. And anyway, she's playing the wife of Vince Vaughn, so, you know, probably sidelined quite a bit in that story. In that year, 2015, also, she makes her Broadway debut in Old Times, opposite Clive Owen and Eve Best. 2016, she has a supporting role on Bastille Day. And in 2017, she played the Celtic Queen Kara in the Sky TV Britannia. Is that something you thought? I feel like you know TV more than me, but no, you don't know that.
I don't
okay.
think that's true. No.
Yeah, the images are interesting. And she's, I mean, a Celtic queen is, she fits that description
right. yeah.
in many ways. She goes into her, I guess, what would say the most successful thing of recent times with Yellowstone. So that starts in 2018. And she plays the daughter of John Dutton, or Dutton, who is Kevin Costner's character.
Right, okay. I didn't clock she was in this show. Interesting.
Oh, yeah. She's highly, I mean, people love her. Like, she seems to be really yeah. enjoying it. Like, she has a whole fan base now based on this. It is a shame because, like, so it is a main role. It's not, like, recurring, like, the daughter visits every so often or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I will say about it is there's been a disagreement contractually, that is a bit murky, and if people are interested in that sort of thing, you can go and read it, but between Kevin Costner and the makers. So I don't know what's going to happen with the future of that show.
Yeah.
But for instance, like, she's been nominated for Best Performance in a Show at the MTV Movie and TV Awards, which feels like a highly competitive thing to be nominated for. She's, you know, nominated at the Screen Actors Guild in the ensemble. Like, really celebrated. I mean, I've never seen Yellowstone, but it is a really celebrated TV show. Mm-hmm. It's also something, because I love Kevin Costner as well, like, I keep thinking I must watch. And I will. That's something I will definitely be doing. She also, I guess since 2018, just seems to love horror movies. So we have her in, and I'll do all of these three before we return to one, but 10x10 or 10x10?
I'm going thinking 10x10, given it seems it's like it's about space. Dimensions. Yeah.
Is 2018, Eli in 2019, and The Cursed in 2021, and of course A Haunting in Venice this year. But 10x10 was not a film I caught up with. So you tell me, you sell this movie to me.
Oh, I ain't going to sell it to you. I don't think it's good at all. But it's... Except her, actually, in all fairness, and him. They're grand. They're both grand at it. But it is about a woman, played by Kelly Riley, who gets kidnapped by a man who's waiting for her outside of kind of a supermarket while she's doing her shopping, tapes her up.
I'm so glad I didn't watch this. Anyway, so I continued. That sounds horrible.
Unpleasant. Takes her to his house. He has a kind of padded, I guess, 10x10 foot room, because it's not a big room.
God.
And shuts the door and leaves her in there. And you're thinking, what's going on here? Why is this happening? And that's ultimately why the film should be interesting. Now, it does kind of play with that and why. And it kind of unravels that there's more to her character. So it's not just something that he's kind of chosen to do for no reason. We learn more about a double life nature to her character. And something that she had done, which has sort of led to this moment. I'll leave it at that, even though I'm not going to recommend people watch it. But if they do, I'll leave it a little open for you to enjoy. It should have been more exciting and more thrilling and more interesting than it was. But Kelly is very good. And what I will say about that is, A, it's good to see her getting another lead role, because they are both leads in this film. But the initial person that we meet when, you know, she's going about doing her shopping day to day at the beginning of the film feels very grounded and sort of warm and, like, motherly, even though she's not a mother character. But there's something very warm and pleasant about her in a way that, although we have seen versions of that in other things, say Mrs. Henderson Presents, but in a more kind of grounded, sort of earthier, homelier type way, was nice to see this different sort of shade to her. But the film as a whole, I think, sadly, is weaker than we would hope from such towering talents as Kelly Riley and Luke Evans.
Yeah. I guess it doesn't surprise me. I guess I didn't expect it to be such a, like, realistic opening. I find things like that, I guess the older I get as well, like, oh, like, these things that happen a lot, I assume. Do you know?
Yes. But there's something, I don't know if it's because it's him, even though, you know, Luke Evans does have an edge to him. How I'm maybe describing it based on what it is maybe makes it sound more tense and scary than it would be. There's something about him that's not as threatening as a kind of character doing that. It may be in a good way, because it then sort of softens it and opens it up to an idea of mystery and why this has happened. But, yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a dud, to be honest.
Well, that's a shame. What is not a dud is where we catch up to. So, A Haunting in Venice. I'm assuming, like...
It's not?
What?
It's not a dud?
But have you... I'm presuming, like me, you've seen all of the three Kenneth Branagh...
I have,
Agatha Christie adaptations. This, on paper, feels like the most interesting choice, because we've had Murder on the Orient Express and Death on the Nile, which are two Agatha Christie stories we've seen often and done very well. Haunting in Venice is kind of not a new story, but it's a version we don't tend to get very often. And also something about it, like just the setup of it. It's like, yeah, Venice is it obviously great. Like, loads of places are a great location. But, like, I remember the first trailer and I was like, okay, so this is leaning into, like, ghosts and ghost stories in a way the other two hadn't, and the supernatural. I will have said, like, oh, you know, you went from, like, usually starry cast to kind of a step down in this film, I would say. Obviously, there's very famous people in it. But then you have, you know, Kelly Reilly is not as famous as, you know, we had Gal Gadot, or if you were going for, what's her name from Sex Education and Barbie, you know, but a young Emma Mackey.
Emma Mackey.
Yeah. So, you know, like, so Kelly Reilly's like an odd fit. I don't really, but I guess the story is Kelly Reilly is a mother, her daughter is sick, and she invites a lot of people over to do a seance, and that includes Tina Fey as this journalist who wants to write about it, but she also wants to bring Kenneth Branagh's character. I can never say his name.
Poirot.
And he comes along too, and mystery continues. Is the best way to put it. But you have a lot of characters, as you will in an Agatha Christie story. I do think, so Kelly Reilly's part as this mother who is, like, she is giving a very campy portrayal of a brittle woman who is never quite, like, it's not that she's never quite stable, but it's almost like she's never quite stable in, like, what she's trying to put across to people. And I mean that in a flattering way in this film, because she's understanding, like, this is silly, this is a bit of fun, I'm going to be playing this in a certain way. But, like, her voice almost, it feels so, like, fakely delicate. And I love it. I just love how she's, like, interacting with everyone. But, yes, what do you make of the movie?
So, I think the first two were pretty dull. So, it's strange that I was drawn to this one. But it did look really different. And it was an unfamiliar Christie tale to me, too. So that's a real draw, and it had more of a horror sense angle to it that the other two didn't. So tonally, from the trailer, it's like, why are we going to get something different? That is true, but when the film actually plays out and you have, like, Tina Fey's character rocking up and stuff, you're like, okay, no, it is more of the same. I enjoyed it more than the two before it, but I do still think it just lacks anything to make it sing or something. It's just, it all feels quite stifled, considering the camp nature of what they're doing. Either for me, they dial that up, or they tonally do something more exciting. And it just always feels very down the middle, pretty straightforward. However, I'm very much into the resurgence of the whodunit genre, and I'm sure I will continue to go to all of these as long as he wants to continue doing them, even if each time I come out and go, well, that was underwhelming again. Kelly, I think, is great. I think she has that real classic Hollywood femme fatale energy in this. I think with that in mind, it does lack substance, but based on exactly what you've said, she, and like she's done in films before, is bringing more to it. She really suits the period, which is very important. I think Tina Fey, for example, and there's a great cast in here, like Michelle Yeoh is doing wonderful stuff, and others, but Tina Fey just really stands out as a contemporary person in this, and it's very jarring. It's still fun. I enjoyed watching Tina Fey in this because, you know, it's quite unusual to see her in this. And at the moment, we have just had Only Murders in the Building, where she similarly is playing a sort of murder detective, but in the podcast realm, whereas here she's an old sort of murder mystery writer, Agatha Christie type stand-in, but with a very different energy than Miss Christie would have had. But she, when she turns up, I don't know if it's just our familiarity with Tina Fey is got too much else loaded into it, where it's just like very strange when she turns up and kind of threw me out of it, even though I enjoyed watching her.
I think that's a good example of this film, because, and the you know, his adaptations of these books, or these stories, she, you know, there's nothing about what she's doing, nor how she's costumed, how it's written, that will make her feel of the time. And it's funny, because I know, I appreciate, like, yeah, that is distracting and all, but like that, I'm like drawn more in, because I'm like, this is so, like, this is purposely a silly thing, and I think it's really enjoyable. Like, for instance, there's a bit where a character who goes into a room and he's like, I'm gonna rest a bit, and you're like, you fucking idiot, like, you're dead, you're gone, you're absolutely not gonna survive. So I think in certain films you don't want it to be predictable. In this, you kind of do. And I think even with Tina Fey, like, even if they don't feel of the time, they certainly are, like, giving enough energy to what they're doing to make it a bit like, in Tina Fey's case, like, she's fast-talking, she's from America, she's, like, contemporary, which is maybe what they were going for, but she just looks totally out of place. And then you have Michelle Yeoh coming in as this mysterious woman who's questioning what Kenneth Branagh is really trying to do, and... there were moments, but it was Kaylee Riley that really, how she's introduced, she's like lurking in the corridor and it's like, my child is so sick. And you're like, I love it. Like, I'm here for this sort of, you're like a film noir, also like a mother really struggling in these sort of kitchen sink dramas. We don't get these characters, thankfully, much anymore. And I think they are aware of what they're doing. No spoilers, but like her arc, let's say, is allows her to do much, do a lot. I mean, most of them, even Jamie Dornan, who has a nothing really part. He's handsome. No, he has good bits, sure, to do. Good bits.
He's got great bits.
Well, yeah.
You've seen the pictures.
Well, official pictures that he's consented to.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. So you can
all Google Jamie Dornan's bits, but Jamie Dornan, you know, who's not a naturally gifted actor. He's been cast in a really quite fun part for him. Do you know what? And I would happily, if you know, I'm at home at Christmas and that's on BBC, I'd happily sit and watch it.
And you know what? That's a good sort of placement of, and where that would sit very well. It's, you know, it's uncomplicated, it's predictable, but sometimes that's exactly what you want in the right moments. And feels,
yeah, and I'll go see as many of those films he's making. If he keeps casting, like, you know, Annette Bening, Michelle Pfeiffer, Olivia Colman, Penelope Cruz, you know, Michelle Yeoh, Kelly Riley, like, how am I going to refuse? Do you know?
Sure. It's a trap. He's got us caught.
He has us caught. And we wouldn't be here talking about Kelly Riley today if it wasn't for Kenneth Branagh. So thank you, Kenneth.
What a service you have done.
Yeah, absolutely. So I did enjoy it. And, you know, we went to see it on a Friday night. We had seen, you know, Death on the Nile and loved that. And that probably, if that when it came out, maybe that was one of the first films we saw in COVID. So maybe there's a nostalgia sort of excitement towards
these
films too. And I remember watching the older ones on TV with people and stuff. You know, so I have a fondness of these stories. So yeah, murder is never fun. But
except
certainly, yeah.
While I was around.
Exactly. Only if there's a mystery and there's a lot of campy looks at each other.
Yeah, it helps.
Yeah, I love that I'm like, oh, 10 by 10 sounds absolutely horrid. I'm like, okay, so here's murder. If it's in the past, it's okay. And that kind of, that rounds us off with Kelly, in that she does have a film coming up with, again, Robert Zemeckis, which is co-starring, well, I'm saying co-starring, but I think Tom Hanks is the lead, and then there's Robin Wright, Paul Bettany, and Kelly Riley, and it's a story that covers the events of a single room and its inhabitants spanning from the past into the future.
Oh!
Which, because it's Robert Zemeckis, I'm assuming it will be something that won't land so well. But because his track record in the last 10 years has not been amazing, particularly with this to do with, like, say, Pinocchio or the Polar Express, or, you know, like, things that are kind of are reaching for things that are not within his grasp, perhaps, in terms of story. He's maybe focusing too much on other elements. But on the flip side, he did make Flight, and he did make Who Framed Roger Rabbit back in the day. So this man could do anything.
Mm-hmm. So I'm excited. It sounds intriguing, so I'm sure I'll be there.
And what else would you wish for Kelly in her future?
So the name that came to my head that I'd love to see her work with, and it's something to do with kind of precision of performance and seeing her fit in the world, as if, like, David Fincher was to do a period type film, I think would be fascinating. But then, as we've been talking, I've been thinking about films I've just seen at the London Film Festival, and one of those has been Saltburn. And I feel like I would really like to see Kelly Reilly in an Emerald Fennell world. I'm hoping that what Emerald Fennell is going to do, based on what we've seen with Saltburn being this adaptation of Brideshead Revisited, but in a, you know, taken in a very sort of different, you know, contemporary direction, I would love her to just keep doing those kinds of things and kind of reimagining these sort of classics in fun ways. And what we get from Rosamund Pike in particular in Saltburn is very fun and allows her to do something that otherwise we wouldn't necessarily get without material like that. And I could see Kelly Reilly occupying a similar space. So I'm going to go with either of those film things, but I do love seeing her in kind of period mode. And if it was to be precise and artful, I'd be interested to see Fincher tackle something of that nature too. So a melding of worlds.
I love that. Well, a director I thought of was Derek Cianfrance. Is that how you say his name?
Cianfrance, yeah.
Something about rewatching Police Beyond the Pines recently made me think that Ben Mendelsohn part of, like, somebody who is powerful, is fierce, but, like, understands their thing, but, like, with a volatile person. I thought Kelly Reilly would be perfect in that sort of Ben Mendelsohn mold.
Nice.
And I was thinking, like, Helen McCrory's part in Peaky Blinders, that sort of tone as well, like Aunt Polly.
Yeah, very much.
It's, like, not a gangster, but some sort of, like, powerful person that has, you know, the advantage of her mind and skill in terms of organisational planning, in either a family or some sort of organisation. But I didn't really go that far. But I did think some organised crime actually might be really fun to watch her be part of, or, like, you know, be under pressure because she's trying to pursue something. I think she's cast a lot as a victim. Like, and I can't really comprehend why, because she doesn't, I mean, maybe because she seems strong, like, so you know she'll be okay, perhaps. I don't know, but okay, this certainly does, to me, feel odd that she's really been cast as victims the whole, apart from Pride and Prejudice, that's the only one that jumps out to me. But otherwise, even in Calvary, like, she is, you know, struggling with her health, her mental health. Sherlock Holmes is being pushed around, Eden Lake, don't need to talk about that. Mrs. Henderson Presents, all these films. So I would like to see her in a powerful role.
Love that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think she'd be really good.
Nice.
Well, and I guess it could be directed by anybody, but I don't know why he came into my head in particular.
No, let's stick with it. And, you know, we would like to see more from him too, so come on.
Yeah. So yeah, thank you so much for letting us talk about Kelly Reilly. Where do people find us, if you remember, if I can speak? Where do people find us?
Where do people find us? In London. But yeah, if you're looking online for us, you'll find us on Twitter/X or Instagram at don'tknowher_pod. Or if you wish to drop us an email, you can do that at don'tknowherpod@gmail.com.
Great. And yes, please do rate, review us. It does help other people find us and makes us feel a little bit appreciated, which is lovely because we don't really know who the hell's listening. But we know there are some, apparently.
We know you're out there, which is so lovely.
It is so lovely. So, and do let us know if there's anyone you would like us to talk about. Instead of me just going to see a film and be like, we need to talk about Kelly Reilly now.
We need to talk about Kelly. There's a Lynn Ramsey film in that. Perfect.
Well, Lynn Ramsey. Oh my God, there we go. That is who should direct the film I'm talking about.
There we go. Sold.
My train of thought, this is it, I'm like imagining the film ahead. Okay, so thank you everybody for listening. And yeah, until next time, we'll see you later.
Fare thee well.
Bye.